Blog Talk Radio.
Try to reconnect them.
Can you hear me?
Yeah.
Yep, we can hear you now.
All right, great. This is Edward X. Young, veteran of over 65 grindhouse horror and science fiction movies, as an actor, a makeup effects artist, and a director. And I also am a former professional film critic. Not former, I still do it. I used to write film reviews regularly for a number of newspapers and magazines published out of New Hampshire, including the Keene Sentinel. And I'm uniquely qualified to contribute much to tonight's show because duties as a film critic for the Keene Sentinel of Keene, New Hampshire, was that for 7 years they wanted me to review the Academy Awards and give my predictions as to on every category, and they paid for me to see every single movie nominated, often 50 to 60 movies annually. And I would see every single film nominated, even the short subjects and the documentaries. And I was assigned to choose who I thought would win and who I thought should win. And there was often a great difference there. But I had to intensely review the Academy Awards for 7 years. And now I'm so glad I don't have to do it anymore, because I have utter contempt for the whole process. And the whole hoopla.
Yeah, I didn't even watch it. I don't waste my time. When they have a movie that I'm in, or somebody that I've worked with on the Oscars, then I'll watch.
Well, that's the point. I've made the point that, you know, if the movie The Human Centipede never received even a single Oscar nomination, then it's proof that the Oscars, the Academy Awards, are utterly and completely worthless.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But in all seriousness, yeah, it's all like Cameron. Cameron's got comments to make. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
I had a question back in the day when you would make your predictions via print and whatnot. What was your ratio for being correct on that? Would you say it was like 50-50, or how often were you right on the nose with your predictions?
Back in the day when I was actually seeing every single film that was nominated, I got to really learned how the process worked. I mean, learned how, what it's really all about. I got pretty good at it. In fact, the year that the Lord of the Rings Part 3, what was the last segment called again, the third part?
The Return of the King?
Return of the King. The year that the Lord of the Rings finally won the Oscar for Best Picture, I think I got almost out of the 25 categories, I think I got 23 of them correct. I only had two mistakes on some minor awards. So I got pretty good at it. But I got good at it because I realized what the game is really all about, that it has nothing to do with awards being given for art. It's about money and business. The last year that I did review the Oscars for the Keene Sentinel, it was the year that the Academy was claiming it was the year of the independent. And, of course, Hollywood's version of independent movies are movies made by great big movie stars and directors, but they're just made on the cheap and off the studio's lots and often in the backyard of some mega producer or some mega star, cast with mega stars. I mean, you know, I made in my commentary on that very final year that I reviewed the Oscars, I made the comment that, you know, everybody knows. Everybody, you can put your money on it, safe bet. Everybody knows that Philip Seymour Hoffman is going to win the Oscar for playing Truman Capote. But 5 years from now, are people going to be going to video stores back when video stores still really existed and were popular? I said, will people still be going to video stores and like asking for, demanding to rent that Capote movie? I said, will we even remember who won these Oscars, you know, next year? I said, if the Academy were truly honest, this was the year of the independent film, the independent film artist, they would have to honestly admit that the greatest and most important film of the year was The Devil's Rejects, and Bill Moseley and Sid Haig both deserved Oscars, Best Actor Oscars, mm-hmm. for their creations in that movie. And I meant that seriously, because, I mean, those were the indelible. I mean, they did give great performances, but Sherry Moon Zombie, too. Those three characters created by Rob Zombie and those actors, an actress. I mean, those were the indelible, unforgettable characters of that
mm-hmm.
year. And a decade, almost a decade later, those characters remain vivid, vibrant. You could walk into a Halloween store and find Sid Haig masks. People dress as the Devil's Rejects, you know, for Halloween contests. I was at an Oscar party last Sunday, February 22nd, 2015, for an Oscar party populated by actors and independent filmmakers. And they had two different contests going, giving away bottles of champagne. Bob Clary, good actor friend of mine, it was his home, and Steve Hersicorn and his wife Mary were really pretty much running the party. But they had two contests, a bottle of champagne for each, and the contests were naturally picking the most winners. And I hardly saw any of the movies that were nominated this year. I mostly see independent films these days. There were a few movies that I did like. I'll talk about that later if we have time. But there was a second contest, which was Oscar Trivia, which I won because I reviewed the Oscars for so many years. I know all the Oscar trivia. I mean, I could teach courses on the history of the Oscar. But what was ironic was, of all the questions they asked, and they asked them publicly, and you had to write it down in your card what the answers were, the question was posed, what movie won the Oscar last year for Best Picture? More than half of the people at this party, and it was crowded, more than half could not remember. Just showing how utterly unimportant it is, but they could not remember who won the Oscar.
So who did win? Who did win this? I don't remember.
It was 12 Years a Slave.
I still haven't seen it. It's an Oscar film. It's not on my radar.
but I'll tell you. I mean, just the most recent Oscars this past Sunday, one of the big tender moments of the Oscars every year, it revolves around the memoriam tribute to the people from motion picture arts and sciences who have died over the past year, the ones we want to remember. And in the middle of all of these memorials, people they focused on, I mean, many of them were people the general public has never heard of. I mean, agents, casting directors, executive producers, people we don't even know who they are. But in the middle of all of this, I was appalled that they neglected to mention. I heard she's now on the website. Big fucking deal. But they neglected to mention the passing of the remarkable Carla Lemley, who died last June at the age of 104. Now, for our uninitiated listeners, I want to make it clear. Carla Lemley, who was 104 years old, was the niece of Carl Lemley, who founded Universal Studios. I mean, that's his company, his baby. And Carla Lemley was an actress. And her acting career, she has the longest span of anyone acting in motion pictures, 90 years. She acted in her last picture shot weeks before her death. She was still acting at 104. She was in some independent film and died a few weeks later. And she started acting, I believe, in 1924. She had been acting for 90 years. And one of her first screen performances was in the 1925 silent film The Phantom of the Opera, starring Lon Chaney Sr. She was in The Phantom of the Opera, and among her many screen credits, she holds the amazing distinction of having been the first person to utter the very first spoken line in the first talkie monster movie, which was Dracula, Bela Lugosi's Dracula, 1931. She has the first line in the movie. She plays a comical role as a flapper riding in a brougham with Dwight Frye playing Jonathan Harker, or Renfield, whoever he's playing, riding with Dwight Frye's in the brougham, and she makes some comment about it being a bumpy ride as they're riding up to Dracula's castle, and she's a flapper in the middle of Transylvania. But she utters the first line spoken in the movie. She is a remarkable film personality, and they didn't mention her. And also, they neglected to honor or mention Joan Rivers, who hosted a pre-Oscar show every year on TV for over 20 years. But Joan Rivers, you know, terrific comic that she was, always made it a point of satirizing and mocking the hoopla for the absurdity that it was. And I really think in the mean spirit of the people that run Hollywood and run the Academy of Arts and Sciences, I think out of hatred and out of a vendetta, they omitted Joan Rivers from the memorial because they were angry at her for, you know, like tearing them down. The mostly Scientologist bastards tearing down their evil church and their religion and exposing them, exposing the emperors for the fact that they wear no clothes, and so they wouldn't even give Joan Rivers, who hosted the Oscar show for 2 decades, they wouldn't even give Joan Rivers an acknowledgement in a memorial tribute. I mean, the poor woman is dead. Well, fuck these people. And last year they neglected to honor Del Tenney, who had died. And, of course, maybe some people might laugh at this, but Del Tenney was a great drive-in figure, a film director, who made unforgettable drive-in horror movies like The Horror of Party Beach, the first rock and roll zombie monster musical, way before Rocky Horror. And also, he made The Curse of the Living Corpse, which is Roy Scheider's first movie as an actor, and made I Eat Your Skin, which co-billed with I Drink Your Blood, Jerry Gross's picture, and the Zombie Island Massacre and other films. And they didn't acknowledge the wonderful Del Tenney, who died in his 80s, and who was still making films in his 80s, too. Nevertheless, I don't want to monopolize the whole show.
But, you know, it seems like in an age when they're supposed to be, the Oscars are supposed to be all about the flash and the pizzazz, the Hollywoodness of everything, and, you know, to not acknowledge Carla, to not acknowledge Joan at the same time. And to me, Carla is more near and dear to my heart, loved Dracula and one of my favorite films of all time, but it's kind of a sacrilege. That's the best way to describe it. It's one of the reasons why I'm glad, at least as far as my filmmaking career is concerned, I'm as far removed from the Hollywood system as you can possibly be.
Yeah.
And I can't be more proud to be not a part of something. Let me put it this way. How's the old phrase go? I wouldn't want to be a part of any club that would have me as a member.
Yeah, that was Groucho Marx said that.
Well, but, you look at what's going on out there. I mean, you know, Doogie Howser hosted the Oscars. And actually, I do like Neil Patrick Harris. But he received a lot of criticism for mistakes he made hosting it. But the first time, he's going to make mistakes. But what I did like...
They criticize every host.
But I do like the fact that at one point he cracked, which wasn't very funny, but he rolled with it, a Harvey Weinstein joke. And then he said, you have to understand, this is mandatory. It's mandatory. Like, you better crack a joke about the emperor of Hollywood, Harvey Weinstein. And I do like the fact that he made it a point of highlighting the fact that the money, the box office take that these movies that were nominated made, and introduced Eddie Murphy, not as an actor. I mean, Eddie Murphy, you know, great comedian in his youth, but has made a lot of trash movies. But highlighted the fact that the billions of dollars his movies have generated. Because, people have forgotten. We've turned the Oscars into some kind of a holy ritual where the award actually means it's the best movie, the best work of art created in cinema worldwide. But the Oscars started out in 1927. I know the history of the Oscars. It started out as a business luncheon. It was, they didn't make a secret of it, it was a celebration at a luncheon, simply, like a corporate luncheon. Like you know, you might have your company softball game. They got together to have lunch and gave awards to the people who had the most successful films of the past year. They called them best, but they made no secret. We're honoring you directors, actors, screenwriters who made the movies that did good business for us, made us a lot of money. And somehow it transmogrified into an event where the public got involved as a form of worship, where to win the Oscar is like a nod from heaven above. And the thing is, I like the fact that Doogie Howser made repeated jokes surrounding the wealth of the people who were nominated and the box office take that they made, rather than how it moved you. And another thing too, I mean, Julianne Moore, they finally gave her Oscar, and she's probably deserved it for years. She's one of my favorite actresses, and drop dead gorgeous. But Julianne Moore wins it for Still Alice. I haven't seen it, but I'm sure it's a moving picture, you know, where she plays an Alzheimer's victim. But I'll tell you, I would find it hard to believe that it was better than her performance in David Cronenberg's movie Maps to the Stars, where she was diabolically brilliant in a really challenging role. But David Cronenberg, who has been nominated for Oscars in his past, probably never will be nominated again, because Maps to the Stars is I met him, and we conversed back in September. Maps to the Stars is a scathing portrait of how decadent, evil, and corrupt Hollywood is, way beyond what Get Shorty did. And Cronenberg admitted that he can't get his movie released in theater chains, and it probably won't be released outside of very few screenings in major cities. And he fully expected to lose money on this picture, but he acknowledged, he goes, "I've made enough money where I can afford to make a labor of love and expect to lose money on it, but I wanted to make this picture." And of course, it so diabolically skewers Hollywood for their hypocrisy and their superciliousness and their evil and corruption that I'm sure that the Academy will never, never give him a nomination again. And I'm sure that the movie has them outraged, and they would never consider even nominating Julianne Moore for her fine performance in that picture. But once again, Cronenberg is probably on their shit list big time now.
Yes. I was going to say, we do have a caller just popped up on the switchboard. I'm going to go ahead and bring them in real quick, see if they have anything they want to say. Area code 570. Area code 570, you're live with us.
Welcome.
Hi, Amanda.
Oh, hi, Amanda. It's
my favorite, Amanda Bastor, who will soon be acting with John Link and I in John Riccio's Bigfoot Blood Trip. Hi, Amanda.
Yeah.
Hi. Finally got a chance to call, so I'm like, I think I'll surprise the boys.
You know what the topic for tonight is, right?
The Oscars?
Yeah.
The Oscars suck roosters in Hades.
I didn't get to watch the Oscars this year. I don't have television at this time, and unfortunately I had to work, so I missed everything. I tried asking my friends, and they're like, "We don't know what you're talking about." I'm like, "Oh." So I just waited for your show.
Well, they were worthless. The Oscars are worthless, in my opinion.
Gotcha.
I mean, it's really they're anti-art, and all they really award are big business. Getting back to Cronenberg, I wanted to say that similarly, Julianne Moore had such a spectacular and daring and really nearly X-rated performance in a woman who's 51 years old. Really some real gutsy scenes in Maps to the Stars, showing all getting sodomized in one scene. But she showed all? Oh, yes, and the carpet matches the curtains, John.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, Julianne Moore is a true ginger, but it's yet a brilliant, searing, disturbing performance. But she wins for another movie. It reminds me of some years ago, maybe two decades ago, when Jeremy Irons won his best actor Oscar for playing Klaus von Bülow in Reversal of Fortune. Irons, ironically, in his acceptance speech, I'll always remember this, thanked the Academy for giving him the award for playing Klaus von Bülow in Reversal of Fortune, but he said he personally felt his greatest performance ever, which was the same year, and personally felt that he deserved the Oscar for acting in David Cronenberg's Dead Ringers, which he felt outraged, was nominated for nothing. It is interesting to have history, Oscar history, repeat itself in that manner. John Link, you were going to do some research and look up some other important people.
Oh, yeah, I forgot
who died over the past year.
First of all, Ben Wolfe, he was in American Horror Story, the season of this year.
But he just died. He died, like, after the Oscars.
Yeah, he died after the Oscars,
John, you were supposed to do your research. Maybe Cameron. I know there were horror film people that died over the past year who were not acknowledged at the memorial. But John Link has to go and mention somebody who died after the Oscars. So who knows? They might mention Ben Wolfe next year. Who the hell knows? Yes, Ben Wolfe played the geek in the American Horror Story. Been to hell of a live chicken. But he was killed in a freak automobile pedestrian accident. He was a pedestrian hit by a truck and killed a couple of days ago.
The truck mirror hit him in the head. He was only like 4 feet four.
You were supposed to do research. This doesn't even apply to our topic. I have so many things on my mind.
You should have reminded me, called me a few hours ago and reminded me I could have researched on my cell phone.
I told you yesterday, you fool. And camera with
it. You know that's why you're always going to be a toady, John. Always.
No, I don't play servants anymore.
Well, you didn't say you played them. You're a real-life toady.
No, I'm not a servant. If I had been a servant, I would have remembered to do that.
Hey, Amanda, I think I'm going to write a role in a movie. I'm going to do my own script, and I'm going to make John Link your toady.
No.
Poor John.
Yeah, well,
He's a my toady in Bigfoot Blood Trap.
Yeah, but that's the last time I'll play a servant.
call a man slave, like my boyfriend, man slave.
Oh, yeah.
Don't talk about this for nothing.
Oh, forget it.
Amanda, you had a nice a clip on the Facebook, you and Lola singing.
Oh, she loves to sing. Her birthday's actually coming up in about 2 weeks, so we're going to have a party here at the house for her. So I'm going to have to get video of her singing happy birthday. But I'm glad you liked it. I mean, I was feeling down, and she was sitting with me, and she's just staring at me, and I'm like, you're my sunshine. And she started, like, doing that mouthy thing, like when we argue. And
she joined
in.
Right now, I have a DVD on which I've muted while I'm talking to you all. And right now I'm watching on my television while I'm talking to you Monster Zero, starring Nick Adams and co-starring Godzilla, Rodan, and Ghidorah, the three-headed monster. Mm-hmm. And once again, enormously popular, iconic series of films. How come no original Godzilla movie was ever nominated for any kind of awards?
Yeah.
And in all seriousness, too. I mean, you look at what Oscars have been given to. I mean, how come Night of the Living Dead, was never nominated for any Oscars?
Mm-hmm.
And we all know Night of the Living Dead was made in 1968. Can anybody remember what the best picture was of 1968?
Nah.
Of course, it was Oliver. I mean, you know, when was the last time you even saw Oliver on TV? You know?
I don't know.
I researched it. But, I mean, once again, I mean, what are these awards for? Mm. I mean, next year, in fact, I challenge anybody who's online with us now, and Amanda didn't even watch it, so it proves my point. I challenge anybody now to repeat for me, because even I can't, unless I look at the list, repeat for me the major awards, Best Picture, Actor, Actress, Director, and the screenplays. I mean, can any of us do that?
Nah.
And I can't. I know that Birdman won Best Picture, and Julianne Moore won Best Actress, and I'm kind of stumped. I think the guy that wrote The Imitation Game won for the adapted screenplay. The director of Birdman, the Mexican guy, won. I forget his name. I don't remember. But the thing is how utterly meaningless they are, and just but also it's not just the Oscars. It reflects the emptiness and the obsolescence of Hollywood in general. I mean, they're making these big budget, monster budget movies where the actors and actresses are getting paid, you know, 10, 20 million apiece, 30 million apiece, just for their personal salaries. These movies cost we're approaching movies that cost $250 million apiece to make. The tickets are overpriced. I mean, I don't know what it's like. I don't even go to the movies anymore. I got to admit, at the New York Film Festival, I saw Whiplash. It was great. And I did see The Imitation Game on Christmas Day at a theater because I had to get out of my fucking house on Christmas Day. Imitation Game, I was actually very impressed with that. But, I mean, movie tickets are obscenely expensive.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, if you go to the city, to a movie theater in New York, I mean, the tickets are, in New York City, they're $15.
Mm-hmm.
And if it's a 3D movie, tack another 10 on for the glasses. New York. So to see almost everything's in 3D now. So to see a 3D movie at a theater in New York City is $25. And then if you want popcorn, the popcorn is $10. The sodas are $6. I mean, it costs one person $50 to go to the movies in New York.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason why it's that price is because, you know, Julia Roberts and Tom Cruise and Tom Hanks are guaranteed a minimum of $20 million salary per picture.
Mm-hmm.
What is it? I think Bruce Willis has a special salary. When you cast him in a movie, he demands $1 million a day.
Mm-hmm.
How many days? But there is nobody on earth in any profession. I'm not even talking about acting. In any profession, in my opinion, that merits $1 million a day. For 8 hours before. I mean, imagine that. I mean, what you're saying is that 1 hour of your work is worth $120,000.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, it's really.
Thank you. Lord have mercy.
Mm-hmm. You know, I can remember when I could get in the Kitty matinee for a quarter or 35 cents.
I remember that too. I remember seeing The Texas Chainsaw Massacre, the original, at a matinee for $1. But I mean, you know, I heard stories. I won't mention names. I wouldn't want to get anybody in trouble. But I have an actress friend who actually moved out to Hollywood and was starting to like get cast in some Hollywood movies, and got invited to, I think it was one of Harvey Weinstein's parties. Might have been. Maybe it was Michael Eisner, one of the big executives, one of the big super executives. And what happened was they were invited to this party, and they thought, oh, how wonderful, we're invited to this, you know, Christmas party. But you know, two of her kids got sick, and they had fevers, and the husband, whatever his job was rather stressed out. And they said, look, this is, you know, bad night, two of the kids have got fevers, and you're sick. So they just didn't go. They received an angry letter in the mail. She fucked herself because she received an angry letter in the mail noting that the secretary of this monster executive, and I'm forgetting if it was Weinstein or if it was whatever, it was one of the big guys, but they received a letter making sure that they took note that although we invited you, you neglected to show up. And we want to inform you that because of this, we're going to keep your name on a list, and you will never be invited to an A-list Hollywood party again. Like, we were outraged at the insult that you didn't show. And then she didn't understand the rules. And not only was she expected to show, but you were expected that you better... I think it was whoever the executive was, it was his birthday party. You were expected to bring a really nice gift because you were invited. And Not some fucked up cheap gift you bought at the mall. When you showed up, you were expected to bring a dear and cherished and expensive gift. This is just like, they're like the emperors of ancient Rome. I mean, it's obscene what exists out there, and you know, and that's why I love independent cinema.
She should have done? She just should have just plopped the kids at the doctor in the hospital and gone.
No, she didn't think it was a big deal. She didn't understand the rules.
Mm-hmm.
It was like if you were invited to, if you worked at, say, you know, a small business, you know, in you know, Kokomo, Indiana, and the boss
mm-hmm.
invited you to a cookout, and your kids got sick and you didn't show up, it would be no big fucking deal.
Mm.
This was like God himself has invited you to his birthday party, and
mm-hmm.
you didn't show up to bring a gift, and we have made note of this, and now you're on our shit list forever.
Mm-hmm.
Now you're fucked, and you might as well just go home back east, because we don't like you anymore. You fucked up. You didn't understand the rules. It's like it's like the movie American Psycho, where they're judging each other's business cards.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Like, oh, look at this. I have the eggshell finish. It's like, oh God, who are you? Mm-hmm. Who are you truly impressing besides yourself?
All of this stuff in Hollywood, in my opinion, like I said, it's anti-art, and that's why I urge all of us independent people to stick together, because. Tragically, I mean, even John Waters advised me when I decided to become an actor in middle age. He told me, he said, you know, gee, you're deciding to be an actor in middle age. Let me ask, is your family very wealthy? I'm like, no. Do you have personal wealth of your own? No. He said, doesn't matter how talented you are. I mean, he drew a metaphor. He said, you know, it's like a great big kingdom, like a castle with a big moat around it, and the moat is full of alligators, and they are not letting anybody cross that moat unless you can buy your way across. And he did say, you realize if you pursue this goal, you're never going to be a middle-class guy from the suburbs deciding to start acting in middle age. He said, you're never going to be kissing Julia Roberts on screen in some major motion picture. And he said, you know, you've got to aim for independent cinema. And the way you're going to make your name in independent cinema is that, you know, you have to push the envelope and do something fucked up. You have to go beyond what Hollywood would dare do.
Mm-hmm.
He said, like, I had a fat guy eat shit off a sidewalk, dog shit off a sidewalk. And, of course, you can't do that because I already did that. But you've got to find your own way of,
mm-hmm.
like, your own way of having a fat guy eat dog shit off a sidewalk. But we are doing it with this Bigfoot movie because all the sick things in this movie, Amanda and John Link are going to have some beautiful scene together.
Yeah.
I'm going to the gym, so hopefully I'll be in top shape, I hope.
I can't wait to work with you again. Now, how many projects have we worked together on that was the same movie, Amanda, but not necessarily in the same scene, really?
Sheriff Tom versus the Zombies, Witch's Blood, and The Soulless.
Mm-hmm.
But we're never really together. We're just in the same movie.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to be filming in the spring for my movie. It's a short film called The Summon. And I'm doing the Bigfoot Blood Trap with you, and then I'm working on another project with another director. It's not going to be a horror. It's going to be a drama. So hopefully I'll start working on that by the fall.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I tell you what, it's not for me to speak up. I mean, I don't know what his methods are for auditioning, but who knows? Maybe you can get involved in Cameron's new movie. It's Crocodile what? What's the actual title, Cameron?
The Crocodile Chronicles.
The Crocodile Chronicles.
Everybody calls it the Crocodile Chronicles. It seems people remember it easier if they call it Crocodile. But
now, who's this I'm talking to?
Do you know what Crocodile is, Amanda?
Not Crocodile, but I know what a Crocodile is.
Yeah, the Crocodile is, in short, a crazy, crazy drug that is kind of rampant over in kind of the more remote parts of Siberia, Russia, and Europe. That over there they use as a homemade alternative to heroin that literally rots victims. It's crazy,
yeah,
crazy.
Yeah, I've seen that. I've actually met somebody in the United States when I was doing nursing who had that. And it was horrific.
When I was made aware of this thing a couple of years ago, it horrified me to the point where I said, this is what my next feature film has to be about, because it's just, you know, I'm a lover of horror, and in real life, I really don't know that I've ever seen anything more horrific than that stuff. It's not a pretty sight.
Why would they take that if they know their nose would fall off?
Well, it's the same with bath salts, too. Like, they think it's because it's legal. Like, I asked somebody this because I work with drug and alcohol people. And I asked them, I said, why are you doing this? I said, you're doing bath salts, you're running around naked, you're stabbing yourself, you're hitting yourself, you get infections. And they said, well, as long as it's legal to us, it's okay.
You don't understand the nature of drug addiction, John, and thankfully you don't understand the nature of drug addiction, John.
Yeah, it's a sad, sad thing. It's not prettier nor faint of heart.
It's like, I'm part of the music scene in New York, and, you know, it's a lot of people I was good friends with, you know, died 20 years ago because they're all the junkies that didn't clean up their act all died 20 years ago. And, and death was definitely on the horizon. Statistics show that the typical junkie, the typical heroin junkie, from the time they shoot heroin from the first time, on the average, until the time they die is 15 years. That's the typical lifespan for a heroin junkie. And people know this going into it, but you'd have to understand the mindset, John. I know you're crazy enough, but thankfully you're not that crazy.
Yeah, I'm kind of glad that that's something that I've never touched. It's just crazy. It's still, even though I've written about it, I've studied it, I've watched more documentaries on it than I can count, I still cannot bring myself to understand why anybody, I can understand the experimentation of trying something once, but once you realize what this is going to do to you, why you would ever become addicted and shoot it more than once, it boggles my mind. And I understand the whole idea of addiction, but, you know, if someone told me, listen, this is the most amazing high you're ever going to have, but your fucking arm is going to fall off, you know, or your leg is going to become infected and have to be amputated, I think I would just, you know, drink a bottle of NyQuil and fall asleep. I mean, that stuff's just crazy. It's just crazy.
I do want to try a hallucinogen one day. I don't know why. I'm so severely curious about trying. What's that one that starts with an F? It's not peyote. It's
You want to try hallucinogenics?
Yeah, I can't think of the name.
Psilocybin.
No, it's salvia.
That's it. Yeah, so I've known a few people that have done that with some pretty bad repercussions because of it. But
nevertheless, we are running short on time. But I was going to say we are addicted to the absurdity of the Oscars. Like I said, seldom. I mean, seldom does it really honor art. It just, you know, it. What's interesting is that, can anybody tell me what won the Oscar for Best Picture of 1959?
Nah.
Of course you can. But we all remember the greatest movie of 1959 was Plan 9 from Outer Space.
But it didn't win the Oscar.
But yet Hollywood makes a big-budget movie about Ed Wood.
Conrad Brooks was laughing about that. He said if Ed Wood had ever gone to Disney, they would have kicked him out on his ear.
But yet, Plan 9 is a movie never be forgotten. Plan 9 is his face. Equally memorable as Pump